Thanks for joining us on episode 1421 of the Inspired Stewardship Podcast.
I'm Jason Perry. I challenge you to invest in yourself, invest in others, and develop your influence and impact the world by using your time, your talent, and your treasure to live out your calling. Having the ability to bring light into the room is key. And one way to be inspired to do that is to listen to this, the Inspired Stewardship Podcast with my friend Scott Mader. Now, in Christian America, they want to test the Lord rather than trusting the Lord. So they're like, oh, God will protect us. And I have to go in and I have to disarm that whole fallacy. So God may protect you, but we shouldn't test him.
Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. If you truly desire to become the person who God wants you to be, then you must learn to use your time, your talent, and your treasures for your true calling. In the Inspired Stewardship Podcast, you will learn to invest in yourself, invest in others, and develop your influence so that you can impact the world.
In today's podcast episode, I interview Jason Perry. I asked Jason about how he went from a SEAL and SWAT officer to focusing on helping train the Christian community on safety. I asked Jason how this work was influenced by his faith journey, and Jason also shares how the tension between self-defense and the Christian walk isn't really there. I've got a new book coming out called Inspired Living, Assembling the Puzzle of Your Call by Mastering Your Time, Your Talent, and Your Treasures. You can find out more about it and sign up for getting more information over at inspiredstewardship.com, Inspired Living. That's inspiredstewardship.com, Inspired Living. Jason Perry is a distinguished voice in both the Christian community and the realm of security and preparedness. As the founder of Trident Shield, a security training and consulting firm in Johnson City, Tennessee, he masterfully integrates biblical principles with practical safety training. Specializing in active shooter and workplace violence prevention, as well as personal safety and preparedness, Jason's approach is deeply rooted in real-world experience and guided by his faith. His extensive background encompasses roles as a Navy SEAL, SWAT officer, executive protection specialist, and corporate security expert. Now as a pastor for Christian Warrior Mission, Jason's expertise in crisis management is enriched by his spiritual leadership, offering a perspective that encompasses both physical readiness and spiritual insight. His methodology extends beyond conventional security tactics, focusing on fostering a spirit of vigilance and resilience that is deeply anchored in biblical wisdom. Welcome to the show, Jason.
I'm happy to be here.
I am happy to have you. I shared a little bit in the intro about some of the work you do over at Trident Shield and working on doing that with what biblical principles, as well as the kind of practical side, the theology, the spirit, and yet the practical side. But I always tell people that I always feel like whenever, and this happens to me too, I write my bio, I write my intro. Of course, I'm going to put all the shiny stuff in that.
Sure.
But there's more to the story. So talk a little bit with the listener about what's behind that. What brought you to this point where you're trying to do the practical work and focus on the biblical side of it?
Yeah, the market really. So originally Trident Shield, which is my emergency preparedness, security, consulting, and training firm, was heavily active shooter in the beginning, right? I started it right after Sandy Hook, and I was working with Fortune 500 companies, right? Fortune 500 was my pipeline. I was referred by the number one insurance company in the world at that time. And so my client list was the who's who of corporate America. Mm-hmm. And I was known as the guy who could go to Berkeley, California and teach a very challenging subject to some people who may get easily offended, and as the same guy who could go to El Paso, Texas and train people who are not easily offended on some difficult content, have them receive it, have them enjoy it, and take it on board. after COVID hit, we took a 90% loss to revenue that year. But obviously, if there's no workplaces and there's no schools, there's no need to mitigate the risk and the dangers of that. But during that time, the Lord really put it on my heart. I'm like, my whole industry is devastated right now. No one's getting ahead during this. So while until this shakes out, I'm going to dedicate everything I can to the Lord. So I started serving God. And when I started serving God, now I put my Christian faith. I became a Chick-fil-A, an outwardly Christian company. And the Fortune 500 didn't like that, right? The fact that I was pro-life, that I was pro-traditional marriage, that I was anti-child mutilation, with certain things out there, I got canceled. And these are people that I had great relationships before, massive projects, big initiatives. And yeah, Jason, you're too extreme to work with. And I said, let me understand this. And I don't mean to take this into a hyper-political realm, but you're for abortion, I'm against abortion. And I'm willing to work with you, but you're not willing to work with me, even though we have differing issues. My goal is to save lives, right? Protect lives from losing innocence and protect lives from violence. And because of my religious views, you don't want to work with me anymore, even though that is still our goal, right? Our goal was that. So after having that happen a bunch to me, and watching as the active shooter is coming back on, as businesses are opening during COVID, I had a really big challenge. I had a massive challenge. I'm like, it's out of the closet. I am a Christian conservative. And so what do I do now when corporate America may or may not want to work with me? So I said, I'm going to start working with people who are not going to cancel me because they're my tribe. So I started going after Christian organizations, classical Christian schools, churches, outwardly Christian faith-forward companies that shared nonprofits that were on the other side of the issues of ones that I was getting canceled on. And that enabled me, it presented an opportunity to make this more than about mitigating physical risk. And then I was able to start mitigating spiritual risk or lifestyle risk. And when I was able to fold that in, it became a way more incredible product where I was empowering people who thought because of their religion, they couldn't defend kindergartners. And I'm like, not only can you do that, you are required to do it. You're the shepherd of that flock. You become the guardian of these 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds. When the parent turns them over to you, that's now your flock. And the shepherd's job is to protect the flock from the wolves, from the lions. And watching that happen and watching and giving them solutions on how to deal with a very serious threat. Before, they just thought, I'm just going to jump in front of it, of the attacker, and that'll be the end of me. But I did what I could. Now watching them actually have hope and formulate plans and knowing that they had a way out of this, that really, it changed everything. Like, I've trained Navy SEALs. I've trained other special forces around the world, SWAT teams as a cop. I've trained elite corporate America, but nothing was as good as being able to get up there, not hide my faith, be able to share my faith and kind of roll it into a discipling and a security training product. And when I walked off my first stage after doing that, I'm like, I'm never going back. Instead of walking on eggshells the whole training session, right, and trying to see who am I offending, this person and that, when you share a worldview, you really can move the chain further down the field. And it was the most incredible experience I've had as a trainer. Yeah, it's a long-winded answer.
But no, that's perfect. And one of the things that I've seen happen, and it's something that we were talking before we started recording, and it's something that I've tried to bring about in my audience, is that, because I've seen cancels on both sides, right? You're too liberal to come here, so we can't talk to you, or you're too conservative to come here, so we can't talk to you, or your views don't agree with my views, so therefore I can't be friends with you. And it's interesting to me how often as humans, we focus on finding the things that are different.
Sure.
Instead of trying to find the things that are in common. It's because, again, even like what you're talking about, even if you politically didn't agree with that corporate culture, the idea of corporate workplace safety, they agreed with you on that issue. You know, right. That was the part that they had in common.
One of my clients was literally one of the top funders of that, of the movement I disagreed with. But when we sat down as a company, and there were people in my company who were like, I don't think we should take them. And I'm like, no, our job is to protect lives. We're going to protect lives, mm-hmm. right? That's what we're going to do. The ones that are out of the womb are just as important as the ones that are in the womb, right? So we're going to protect. They don't deserve to have violence visited upon them. So I was willing to do that. And then to have somebody who was not that client was happy with our content and happy that we were willing to take them on and protect them. It was somebody far else who was just worried of offending their base. And unfortunately, we can't disagree as adults in America anymore and get along. With social media, everyone knows exactly where everyone stands. I'm 51. How old are you?
Scott? I'm 56.
Yeah. Okay. So when we grew up, we didn't know how people voted.
I know. Yeah. Remember, you never asked. It wasn't even polite to ask the question.
I didn't know what people thought up and down my street. And I knew back in the day, we knew who our neighbors were. We knew who lived a street away. I knew everybody within a 4-block radius, which is crazy because now we don't even know who lives across the street and down a house. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's where we really come. But now with social media, everyone's got a microphone and everyone's blasting what they think. And it's really brought some friction and tension into the business world that most people didn't have to deal with in the past.
And the only caveat I would put on that I've noticed is people will see one piece of information and from that they'll extrapolate a whole mess of things that, you voted for that candidate, therefore you must believe X, Y, Z. And it's wait, some of those things I believe in, some of those I don't, but you may or may not actually fit the quote whole package, but that's what we also tend to do that. We ascribe even more information than we actually have from limited information.
that's a really clear point. And basically people have become 1 and 2 issue voters.
Yep.
And with those single 1 or 2 issue voters, there's a definitive line. Do you support my side on this or do you not support my side on this?
Us versus them.
Yeah. And that's really what it's come down to. And that's the state of America today. So because of that, because of the one-sided canceling that I was having on that, I had to shift who I worked for. And by doing that, I'm infinitely happier. I'll tell you that. But some people can't do that. So again, it's, you got to do what you got to do to feed your family and stay true to your beliefs. And I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Talking a little bit about your faith journey, backing up even before you made this decision, mm-hmm. how would you describe your faith journey and how it's affected what you do?
Oh boy. That's a big one. Yeah. So I was an atheist for 37 years and I was absolutely miserable. I tried plugging it. I believe that everyone has a God-shaped hole in the center of their chest and either God fills it or the world fills it. And I tried putting everything I could in that hole to fill that hole. And until I found Jesus, I never felt whole. Once I got healed and found Christ, everything changed about my life. It wasn't all overnight. I still tried to walk with one foot, as we Christians would say, one foot in the world and one foot with the cross. And it was tearing me in half. So again, when this happened, it allowed me to step out of that and into alignment 100% with my Christian beliefs. And again, it's changed everything. Absolutely everything I do now is for the kingdom of Christ. I'm a pastor. I run a ministry. I have a farm where we grow. We have cattle, hogs, chickens, where we use to feed our congregation and community. And then, of course, Trident and Shield, we're protecting Christian organ. We protect everyone, but now we've really hyper-focused our niche, which is the Christian community.
Mm-hmm. How do you see that? You know, you referenced earlier that tension that some people of faith feel about the kindergarten teacher that's like, how do I protect these kids and yet also live out my Christian values? Sure. And I think we have that sometimes even in our families, the man wanting to be a protector and a provider and yet also wanting to be kind or wanting to describe and love others like we're called to do and all of that. How do you see that tension playing out in families and in the organizations that you work with?
There shouldn't be a tension, right? There's anytime when you're talking about the Bibles, there's a lot of opinions and a lot of theories and a lot of positions that run counter to one another, right? That some would say, you know, run counter to one another. You have Calvinists and Arminians. You have young earthers and old earthers, all different types of different beliefs and faith. The model is Jesus Christ. Okay. Now, and you got to take Jesus Christ not only when he was here during his earthly ministry, but who he was throughout the entire Bible. Too many Christians only want to focus on the last third of the Bible, and they don't want to consider the first two thirds of the Bible, which is, for example, my study Bible here. The New Testament begins, let's see here. So right there. So it's about two thirds to one third, right? And when you look at it in its entirety and you do not cherry pick individual things, you'll see that unfortunately conflict and warfare and so many other things that are part of this fallen world have always been there since we got kicked out of the Garden of Eden, right? Shortly thereafter, after the Garden of Eden, we go from that to Cain and Abel, the first murderer, to Tubal-Cain, who is like the first mass murderer, right? 77 people I'll kill instead of just 7, right? For vengeance on themselves. And again, because of that, when you take the whole Bible into context, you'll see always the need for guardians. So a lot of people don't realize this, but who in the New Testament was the most praised person's faith in all the New Testament? I won't put you on the spot. It's the blood-soaked centurion where Jesus Christ marveled at his faith. Okay, so there's God in the flesh marveling at someone's faith who is a blood-soaked centurion Gentile, okay? So another point, who was the first Gentile saved? Another blood-soaked centurion named Cornelius, who was a special forces centurion from the Italian cohort. Who was a man after God's own heart? Who did he love most? David, who was what? A warrior, right? Again, why is that? Because in the Bible, it says there is no greater love than this, to lay one's life down for one's friends, okay? The soldier and the law enforcement officer and other warriors out there do it for people who hate them, who don't like them. Who does that sound like? Christ, right? So we risk all to protect others. Now, as a shepherd, you look at a flock, this is a great example. People don't think of a shepherd as a warrior, but you had to protect it from other people stealing your sheep. You had to protect it from wildlife, wolves, lions, et cetera, et cetera. And then what did you do when you weren't protecting? You were loving and caring, feeding and nurturing and pouring into them. So it's a complete identity, right? It's a complete identity. You can't just shear off one side or shear off the other. It can't all just be about we can't all just be about, I'm just going to be a nice guy, right? If you're a nice guy and you're watching someone rape your wife because you don't want to offend them, you're not being a very nice guy to your wife, right? Or you're not, if somebody's trying to corrupt your kid and you're letting them do it because you don't want to risk offending them, guess what? You're not being very kind to your kid. So the key thing that we have to do, in my opinion, which we all have those, is I use this as the great referee. This is the English Standard Version Bible, but the Bible, I've got about 30 of them around here, is I use that as my mediator. When me and my wife have conflict, she brings the Bible to me and shows me where I'm screwing up. I bring the Bible to her screwing up. Now the referee is God and not me or her. And that is really useful, particularly in friendship, particularly in business when you're dealing like with another Christian. Like I say, hey, listen, we agreed to this. I know you're a fellow believer. And bring it before God. So that kind of changes the whole part. It changes everything. Now, unfortunately, to get back to your original question, which is how do you be protector and how do you be lover and nurturer at the same time? And it's easily done because God made us that way. God made us the protector of the garden. We failed. We let in the serpent, right? So again, it's about not just focusing. Too often in the church today, we say God is love. God is love. And in the Bible, it says God is love. But God is first among many things, holy, holy. That's his primary attribute. It's holy, which means separate from us, completely different than us. So we have to be all aspects of God. Mm-hmm. There you go. Model all aspects of God. So,
so when you go in and you're working with people physically in the room, sure, kind of thing, what are some of the biggest, I don't want to say mistakes because that's really the wrong word, but what are some of the biggest challenges that you think we face today when it comes to all of those things, workplace safety, whether it's at a church? I'm in a rural church in the middle of nowhere. We have that, and we have a safety team now, and we have cameras, and we have all of those things that didn't seem necessary 20 years ago or 30 years ago, but seem really necessary today. What are some of the biggest challenges you think we're facing today?
So if you're talking about an organization, what in the active shooter space, what they do, it's really understanding the risks appropriately. If I want to shut down a church, I don't have to shut down a church with an active shooter, right? I can go in there and protest the church, cause them to make bad decisions for them to go hands-on, and I can sue them into extinction, right? So right now, everybody wants to be a cowboy in the church security industry. Everybody wants to think that they're Secret Service and that they're in there doing whatever, and many of them have next to no training. And I admire they're wanting to be a part of the solution, but they really need to have responsible training done so they don't hurt the 6-year-old standing next to the bad guy. Mm-hmm. So the first part is getting over, particularly in Christian communities. So actually, I'll go through two mindsets, secular America versus Christian America. Secular America thinks that if they're going to train someone, it's going to scare them. And so they don't want to scare their people, so they don't train. Their people are already scared. Every time one of these things happens on the news, which is weekly or tri-weekly, everyone says, oh my God, if that happened here, X, Y, and Z. And they have a scenario that plays out in their head, which is horrific. Okay? So they're already worried about it, particularly if they're in a school or in an environment where this has happened before or happens frequently in their industry. Not training them is the biggest problem for that, right? It's sitting there saying, choosing a partner who is, there are bad partners out there. So one of the original first to market people really thought the way to train people was to scare the heck out of them and do shock and awe training, which just traumatized a lot of people. Mm-hmm. That's not what we
it
do.
Causes them to shut down when there is an actual emergency a lot of times.
Exactly, right. Yeah. So we do what's called empowerment. We do everything is based from an empowerment situation. We don't do shock and awe. We inject a law. Like our training session is a good time. It's wait, it's an active shooter. No, it's a good time because everything you're learning in that is going to go far beyond the corporate footprint and is going to go out there and make you safer at the mall, at a football game, at a concert, at the grocery store. And when we do it and teach it in such a way that there it is, build tension, deflate with comedy, build tension, deflate with everyone's smiling, everyone's laughing, everyone's having a good time because that is the best way to learn. Right. If everyone's in their white knuckle, because you'll see people come in because they've been scarred in the past and they're leaning back in their chair and they're white knuckled and they're closed off and they're doing all this stuff. And that's why our training is so much longer than our competitors, because we spend a lot of time using emotional intelligence to let people know, hey, we're doing this because we care about you. Yeah. Right. And if anything should ever, the odds of an active shooter happening to you are very small, but the odds of violence happening to you or someone you care about is certain, and take the things you learn about this and apply it in those areas. And one, hopefully you'll be able to avoid it or at least or mitigate it. And that's what we train people to do. Mm-hmm. Now in Christian America, they want to test the Lord rather than trusting the Lord. So they're like, oh, God will protect us. And I have to go in and I have to disarm that whole fallacy. God may protect you, but we shouldn't test him. Jesus himself wouldn't test God. When Satan said, jump off from here and the angels will catch you or whatever. So what I say, the difference between trusting and testing is this. If you are trusting the Lord and you want to go parachuting, you go and you buy the parachute for your appropriate size. You go and you take training. Okay. Then you pack your chute to the best of your ability. You go up in a plane, you jump out, you do everything you're trying to do, and you ask God to bless it. Okay. I didn't get hit by a plane. I didn't hit power lines. I didn't know all these other things. And God, that is trusting the Lord. Okay. Testing the Lord is going up in a plane and jumping out without a parachute and saying, God, save me. Mm-hmm. And that's how far too many people go around life today.
And again, it is that. So it's a little bit of the stick your head in the sand mentality of it'll be, and again, like I said, I'm in a small rural church that at first glance you would think, oh yeah, there's no reason for them to worry about it, and yet
those are places where
we're aware enough to go, oh no, we need to worry about it, it could happen here.
If I wanted to be successful on an active shooter, I would go to a rural church because they have a smaller police department. Their response time
is long.
Is way longer. There are places where the response time is an hour.
Yeah,
I could do a lot of damage in an hour and be off to the next target.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, we've been blessed
into this false sense of security that isn't really there sometimes.
Yes, yeah. And we've been blessed with a bunch of pretty weak, incompetent shooters, right? But it's not like we get a SEAL team operator out there doing this stuff.
Yeah, and when that does happen, it tends to be a much larger footprint.
Well, when it does happen, it'll be far worse. And that's why it really is a protection from God that we haven't had anything like that. When you think 22 veterans kill themselves every day, they're already killing themselves. Right. To think that some of them wouldn't want to make a statement is just remarkable.
Right. I remind people all the time that there isn't actually an entrance exam for becoming a criminal. And we're very fortunate that is true because
yes.
Many criminals are becoming a criminal because that's all they can do. Not all. There are smart ones too, but it's much more common.
and here's something that is different that's evolved from when we grew up to what today. So before, if you wanted to commit a crime, you typically had to go somewhere to do it. You wanted to get access to drugs. You had to go into a shady part of town, make the drug deal. If you wanted to go hurt something or prostitution or any of these other things, you had to go someplace, right? Now you're like three bad decisions for committing a felony on your cell phone at any point.
When you can bring it right into your bedroom, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of risk out there that we have to responsibly manage, particularly because we have a supercomputer on a lot of our kids' nightstand.
Right. And connections are much easier today. Again, before the show, we were talking about time zones and all of those things. I've had clients in 15 countries, 16 countries. And I work in the middle of nowhere, you know, and yet I can talk to people all over the world. And
I can't recall where exactly you are again.
I'm in South Texas, close to San Antonio, but I'm over an hour from everything. I live out in the country. Sure. I drive an hour to go to the grocery store.
I'm actually going to be, like I said, I think I'm going to be in southwest, mainly south of San Antonio. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to grab a steak with you, since it's one of the few good places you can get a steak.
Absolutely. We have some good steak here, that's for sure. So I've got a few questions I like to ask all of my guests, Jason. But before I go there, is there anything else about the work you do or the journey you've been on that you want to share with the listener?
Yeah, I've just recently wrapped up several webinars, seminars on risk in 2024. Unfortunately, because of the political cycle and the political realities we're in, 2024 has the probability as a risk manager to be a pretty dangerous year, right? We know that racial violence escalates during this. If we look at 2020, you roll into that, into how the sides, the political aisles, tend to drive everyone into their corners the closer we get to November. And when that happens, people who are on the stressed or on the frayed edges of society tend to act irrationally. And so I really encourage people to look at the realities of the news in your area and make sound decisions. Invest in some training from me or somebody else. I don't care who you go to. Get some training to protect your family, protect your kids. The date rape drugs that are out now, just for kids, a friend of mine went to a country concert festival. And he's got very attractive drinking age daughters. And they went and they got a round of beers for him, his wife, and his daughters and the people that were there. And he got the spike drink. And he lost 12 hours off of one beer. That was meant for one of his daughters. Okay. So again, it's a far different world with fentanyl and all these other drugs that are out there. There's no more experimentation. When we grew up, you take a puff of a joint, you're fine. You take a puff of a joint now, laced with fentanyl, you never wake up. And the person who does CPR on you doesn't wake up. That's how bad this stuff is. So the margin of error that we had in our generation is completely gone. So really, the only way to do this, I'm not telling you to lock yourself in your room and live a paranoid, scared, schizophrenic life. I'm telling you to go out and experience life, but you have to be responsible. You have to always be aware of your surroundings. You have to always have a plan, okay, and always be ready to defend yourself. It doesn't take long on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter to watch innocent people getting attacked all day long, and they're all clueless. So don't be that victim. Be the victor.
Right. Unfortunately, it's even just the simple situational awareness of knowing what's going around you. It's less prevalent today because more people are, you got your ear pods in and you're listening to whatever and all of the other things that can distract us from even just knowing what's going on right around us. I see people all the time that I could walk right up to them to say something to them and they never even knew I was coming. And what if I had bad intentions?
Yeah, I used to know a stat, and I'm sorry, I didn't look at it before here. But the amount of people who walk into traffic while looking on their cell phone in cities all across America, it's in the thousands.
Yeah.
Thousands of people who die from being distracted while walking on the cell phone.
Yeah, just distracted. And I've done it too. Again, and I'm actually relatively aware, and I've done it too, where I get distracted by something that's going on and walk into a pole, so to speak, or whatever. Sure. That's easy to do. So my brand is Inspired Stewardship, and I run things through that lens of stewardship. And yet that's one of those words that I've discovered means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So when you hear the word stewardship, what does that word mean to you?
Well, stewardship, again, is, you know, it goes back to the flock. You're being responsible with what God has blessed you with. Your, whether it's your wealth and your war chest, as I would call it, to be used for the kingdom, whether it be the kids that you were entrusted with, that you were blessed to have, your relationship with your wife, your friendships, you have to be a good steward of those, right? And so stewardship is, again, goes directly back to being the shepherd. It's just another word for shepherd or a different profession, right? Steward would be more governmental if you were to look at it, or estate type things if if you looked at the traditional definition of steward, I would imagine, where, and then flock would just bring it to farming, right? Or herdsmen or whatever, animal husbandry.
So this is my favorite question that I like to ask everybody. Imagine for a minute that I invented this magic machine. And with the power of that machine, I was able to pluck you from where you are today and transport you into the future, maybe 150, maybe 250 years. But through the power of this machine, you were able to look back and see your entire life, see all of the connections, all of the ripples, all of the impacts you've left behind. What impact do you hope you've left in the world?
Well, that's an easy one for a Christian, that I led as many people as I possibly could to Jesus Christ, and that I passed on my Christian identity to my children and family members, that I had an impact for the kingdom.
So what's coming next? What's on the roadmap for the rest of this year?
Well, the rest of this year, I'm speaking at the ACCS conference in Georgia on June 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd. That's the Association for Classical Christian Schools. I'm one of those keynote speakers there on the subject of protecting schools. Training a lot of Christian schools, Christian organizations. I'm also doing some security work down around the border. That's in San Antonio, south of San Antonio, around the border. So I've got a busy year, as well as I'm on the air now, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 9 o'clock, doing my Christian Warrior Mission podcast. That's on Twitter, Facebook, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn. And there it is a Christian fellowship show where we focus on five things. Faith, making that first. It's an accountability group. Family, how to pour into our family members, whether it be your wife, your kid, the lady at Walmart, your neighbor. Fitness, becoming as healthy as we possibly can be, being a good vessel of the Holy Spirit. Fundamentals, which is your skill set, which is what makes you valuable to yourself, your family, and your community. And finances, are you responsibly managing your war chest, which is what you're blessed with? Are you using it all to chase stuff, or are you actually making a difference in people's lives?
And you can find out more about Jason Perry over at ChristianWarriorMission.org. Of course, I'll have a link to that over in the show notes as well. Jason, anything else you'd like to share with the listener?
No, just that Jesus loves them. And if there's ever any questions I can answer, you can find me on every social media platform. Twitter is Pastor Seal Cop. Everything else is Christian Warrior Mission.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been an honor to be here.
Thanks so much for listening to the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. As a subscriber and listener, we challenge you to not just sit back and passively listen, but act on what you've heard and find a way to live your calling. If you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor. Go over to inspiredstewardship.com/iTunes rate, all one word, iTunes rate. It'll take you through how to leave a rating and review and how to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you can get every episode as it comes out in your feed. Until next time, invest your time, your talent, and your treasures. Develop your influence and impact the world.